Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion for this Tuesday, the 14th of... No, it's the 14th of July, and it's 14 minutes past 9 o'clock. I did have both those numbers right. Welcome, and we're glad you're with us. All you have to do to be a part of the program is to email us, panel@wamc.org, and we would love to hear from you as always. panel@wamc.org. Keep your letter short and to the point and on topic, and we'll be good to go. panel@wamc.org. Let me introduce the group to you if I can. WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Big Joe. Great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. We go to former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, who is in the house. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great, Joe. Good to talk to you.
Wonderful to have you on the program. As always, we go to investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
Fantastic. Are you well? Are you okay?
I'm okay, yes. Hanging in there.
I'm not sure you'd convince a jury, but thank you. Counterterrorism expert and best-selling author Malcolm Nance is here. Good morning, Malcolm. How are you?
Good morning, Joe.
Very nice to have you here. Good to have all of you here. Thank you very much for... congregating to talk about these issues. We touched on this yesterday, but there was a lot of back and forth. The administration was trying very hard and sent out an anonymous note on Sunday to the press, basically outlining the mistakes that Dr. Anthony Fauci had made throughout the pandemic. And it was widely seen, as what many had suspected for a while, that Fauci was being sidelined. There was quite a bit of uproar, mostly from Democrats, but also from top infectious disease experts across the country and across the globe, who also expressed their great concerns over the treatment of the doctor. Meanwhile, Dr. Fauci was at the White House yesterday, a day after the Trump aides tried to undermine him. The visit underscored a reality for both the president and his most prominent coronavirus advisor. This from the New York Times. They are stuck with each other. The visit came yesterday, and he has not had direct contact with the president in more than 5 weeks, even as the number of Americans with COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, has risen sharply in the Southwest. Slipped back into the West Wing to meet with Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff, while his allies denounced what they called a mean-spirited and misguided effort by the White House to smear him. Alan, let's start with you.
You know what they say in bridge, Joe? Do you play bridge?
I don't. I just know there's a word Trump in it. Other than that, I don't know.
They when you don't want to bid, you pass.
Yeah.
I want to pass to Rosemary, who is my most impressive Fauci discusser. So I pass to Rosemary.
Okay. I knew that we were going to get into this discussion today because we have been, Alan and I, debating for weeks whether Fauci was doing the right thing staying in high office, that he perhaps thought he could make a difference with Trump. We see that's not going to happen, that he's perhaps doing a lot of work on vaccines that he could not do if he were outside of his government position. But I would maintain that he can't be happy about this. He should not be happy about this, and Americans shouldn't be either. We're debating the infallibility or not of Dr. Fauci instead of doing what we should be doing to get this country out of the plague state we're in. I think he should have left long ago, as I've said. I'm not sure. You knew this was coming. This is what Trump does to all of his experts. He embraces them, loves them, calls them his best friend. And then as soon as they begin speaking the truth rather than Trump's view of the world, he cuts them. And that's what's happening now. I don't see what good is going to come out of this.
Alan, would you like to now non-pass?
Yeah, I'll take my pass back.
Okay.
Rosemary and I do disagree on this. I have nothing but respect for Rosemary and her views, and I understand where she's coming from. Nevertheless, Fauci is a national hero as far as I'm concerned. He's won the National Freedom Award. Libby was on the other day talking about what he did in the AIDS crisis and how great he was. And to me, the idea that he has the guts to stand up to this president and to tell him off, basically, without screeching, but tell him off and say, no, we're in terrible trouble. Look, people get fooled. I got a letter this morning from a wonderful member of WAMC, a supporter, who said, stop talking about Trump. You know, leave the orange one alone. No, I'm not going to do that because I think this is the worst president this country has ever had. I think he's a would-be dictator. I think he's somebody who's leading us into terrible turmoil. But to get back to Fauci, let me just say, and by the way, you know, you'd have to do something very dramatic to me to get me to stop talking about the guy I think is more of a threat to WMC, but it's true, but to the country and to all of us than Trump is. It's just something that if we don't go in the streets, at least we have the important. It's important to speak out and to keep speaking out. But in terms of Fauci, he's my hero. I'm sticking with him.
Malcolm Nance.
You know, this campaign to denigrate Fauci has been building. I think Rosemary touched on it a little earlier that, you know, when you get in contact with Donald Trump, the first thing he does is he praises you because he feels that whatever your panache is, you will help him look good. Then when any measure of reality intrudes on your world from your expertise into his world, into this fantasy world that he lives in, then he lashes out. It always starts with a whispering campaign from his friend, you know, his allies, which we saw in this opposition series of answers that Kayleigh McEnany and her staff sent out the other day, saying where Dr. Fauci was wrong. I mean, that's crazy. So then it builds into an open whispering campaign, which I guess the deputy communications director sent out a cartoon of him criticizing him, essentially flushing America down the toilet. And then it will end with a tweet or a tweet storm where Trump will just call him out and say he was a liar and is a Democrat and is a liberal, which in their world, you know, anything that involves education or knowledge or expertise is liberal and therefore bad.
Mike Spain.
You know, just to counter one thing Rosemary went over points, Fauci, by sticking around, he has been effective at driving public policy. He's used his long-established credibility to speak the truth, even when it was really uncomfortable and gloomy to hear it. And that fueled public demand for a federal response, and at least some action got done by Trump because of that. The pressure, Fauci spoke, the public reacted, and then Trump had to react to that pressure. And you know, just getting to the liberal part of Fauci, you know, and that he's a liberal Democrat. I remember back when Michael Dukakis was running against the first President Bush back in 1988, there was a debate where they asked the candidates who their heroes were, and George Herbert Walker Bush says, "There's a guy in our health agencies that you probably never heard of, but he's my hero." And he named Anthony Fauci because of everything he was doing to try to combat AIDS at the time. This guy has been there since Reagan, and he's been an advisor to all the presidents. And it's this time it seems different. It seems like finally somebody had the courage to stick around, and he's untouchable. He's a public servant, and his word has prevailed. And he, one more thing, he does admit when he makes mistakes. He says, "We know more now. We'll know more later. We're going to change what we do." That's the way to be. You've got to be able to pivot when it happens. I don't know why politicians won't admit it when they make decisions that at the time made sense that have turned out not to, just like this nursing home thing with Cuomo. It made sense at the time. It wasn't such a good choice now. And now he just wants to deflect it and not take any blame for it. But I think it's honest when someone steps forward and says, "Okay, we're going to do this now because that didn't work."
Can I get back into this? Because I think some of what Mike is talking about, the answer is the media. We don't like politicians to, as the term is in the media, flip-flop. You are not allowed to evolve. You're not allowed to say, hey, I have more information now than I did then. You're still vilified as a flip-flopper, as someone who cannot be relied on. So, of course, politicians want to deflect it. It makes sense. On the other hand, most do apologize. We've heard apologies from everyone in government in the past few years, except for Donald Trump. And that's the danger for Fauci. Fauci is... I don't disagree with anything any of you have said, except whether he should stay with Trump. He is a hero. He is a man of principle. And God knows we need heroes and men of principle in this country right now. But he doesn't have to be part of the Trump administration. And by sticking around, the same thing is happening to him that happened to Rex Tillerson. Name your person. To every person who's ever been associated who had a good reputation at one time with Trump. And it is hurting him. It's all over. We don't hear it on WAMC, but all over the right-wing media. I put up something on my Facebook page. I'm horrified at the responses I got about how I'm full of BS because Fauci is filled with errors. It was all the Trump talking points coming back at me. So he is hurting himself for that. And does that help us? He's hurt. On the other hand, I look at Dr. Birch, who has stayed. She's been loyal to Pence. How that happens, I don't understand. And nothing. Has she had an effect either? I don't know. Fauci could work any place. He could be fired, and his words would still have an impact because he has expertise that is genuine, not just granted to him.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, for some reason, the president is right now not going to fire him. Not that he could. There'd be hell to pay if he did. Nevertheless, I think he's done. I think Fauci, by staying in, this is where Rosemary and I just disagree. By staying in, he has a voice that is unlike any other voice. He's there. They can't fire him. He's made his point. When Rosemary says he's getting unpopular, on the contrary, the polls are all showing him he's one of the most popular people in America. I got an email the other day saying the ticket ought to be Cuomo Fauci. So I think people love him. And I think he's getting a lot of credit. Yeah. You will?
I sent you that, Alan. It was a joke.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, fine. You know that Rosemary, that both you and I suffer from that. I quite frequently say something that is funny or I thought was funny and then I have to explain to people it was a joke. So does the president.
The Washington. Go ahead, Malcolm.
Yeah, you know, it's very easy for us to come and say, hey, Dr. Fauci is a hero, which he is. You know, it's even harder, though, than for people to call out who the real goats in this story are. You know, Rosemary mentioned Dr. Bricks, who has been nothing but obsequious to the president.
Correct.
What's his name? The Surgeon General. Oh, my God, that guy's a disaster.
Oh, God, yeah.
And, you know, they said there was an article in the Washington Post.
Jerome Adams.
Jerome Adams. The nicest guy in Washington, D.C. is the wrong guy for this time. I've always said this, and I'm going to say it again. I think at some point we're going to find a document or a series of documents that show that they actually sat down, minus Fauci, and decided, you know, in Wannsee conference-type historical setting, that they were just going to stop treating this virus and let herd immunity take over. And all throughout June and July, we had that impression that they were just surrendering to coronavirus. So I think that if God is good and there's a new administration in November, Joe Biden ought to just say, that guy is the director of Health and Human Services. We will create a national task force come January 21st, 2021, to knock this thing down, to do a full-scale actual war on coronavirus using every aspect of U.S. government, because the Trump administration is not going to do it. They don't care anymore. And if Fauci's that smart, well, maybe his position in history is still coming up.
From the New York Times, Mr. Trump could formally remove Dr. Fauci from the official coronavirus task force, but that would be a relatively meaningless step because it no longer serves as the nerve center of a pandemic response that the Trump administration has pushed governors to take responsibility for. As director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases at the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Fauci is a career civil servant. Firing him would require a finding of cause of malfeasance and would most likely end up tied up in lengthy appeals, though the president could still seek to sideline Dr. Fauci in meaningless work, transfer him to another location, or cut his budget in an attempt to get him to resign. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance. We have letters on the Fauci issue. We'll go to those, and then we'll move on to other items on our agenda this morning. Mark says the only good thing about the I'm jumping the gun there, so let me get to things. Yeah, remain on topic is always good. Here we go. Malcolm is spot on, and so is Alan. However, Rosemary's point is the best for the doctor's health and reputation. Dr. Fauci should be considered a big critical resource for the country's survival. Get him the hell away from Trump. Dr. Fauci will live longer and be very effective. We also got this from Deidre, who says it is never emphasized that Dr. Birx's effectiveness is constrained by her rank as captain in the Army. Guess who the commander in chief is, especially after Vindman's beheading. We need them both. Dr. Fauci is nowhere near as vulnerable. We go to Anna, who says every scientist who ever lived has made mistakes. Scientists notice their mistakes, do course corrections, and keep on working and searching. Listing Dr. Fauci's mistakes doesn't detract from his accomplishments or his stature. The misguided notion that mistakes will tarnish or even destroy his feeds into our unfortunate American tendency to put public figures on pedestals and then gasp in horror at the sight of any flaw. I just like to point out, though, I think the list that they put out was rather poor in its design, because it was curated in the sense of they didn't include the entire topics. And the times where they said, well, you don't need to wear masks was, yes, but, you know, this could turn on a dime and we could be in a very serious situation very soon.
Exactly.
So, you know,
exactly.
It wasn't.
Not only that, Joe, he was playing, from the very beginning, here he has one of the bravest men in America, Fauci, is playing with Trump, one of the meanest, most sadistic guys that we have ever seen. Somebody just wrote a letter and said Andrew Johnson was a far worse president than this president is. No, Andrew Johnson was pretty bad, all right, but this guy has the potential for taking this American democracy away. He's a racist of the worst kind. I'm not buying it. I know that I had an initial point I was trying to make, but it's long gone.
Mike says I have to give Donald Trump a certain amount of quote-unquote credit for the way he is quote-unquote handling the coronavirus. He has pretty much left things to the states by pretty much telling them what he wants, but providing no roadmap on how to achieve those things. Pressuring states to reopen schools is the latest example. Very clever. If it works, he can point to himself and what a genius, quote-unquote, he is. If the states fail, he can point a finger at them and try to avoid responsibility. Donald finds it easier to find scapegoats than to look in the mirror.
26% of the American people think he's doing a lousy job with the coronavirus. Somehow he's being held responsible by an awful lot of people.
The faster, this is from CJ, the faster we remove these con men, traitor enablers, and religious charlatans, i.e. Trump, Barr, Pompeo, McConnell, Collins, etc., from the branches of our democracy, the faster we can utilize our resources to stop the human rights violations committed by China, Russia, Syria, etc. Otherwise, we are beholden to hypocrisy and allow the human rights violators to elevate their voices.
You know, at some point today, I hope that Malcolm, our expert on international things, will talk a little bit about our new, because we've been warning about an October surprise, right, about our new China Sea policy. Now, the Chinese are not good people, and we know it, about this, about the China Sea and what they're doing. But it is interesting that now, all of a sudden, Trump is letting them have it in real dramatic terms. Could this be the October surprise?
Malcolm?
That would be very unfortunate. We do not need anything to happen between us and China in the South China, you know, in the South China Sea, where the issue is that they are taking over these dozens of tiny little atolls and turning them into these extremely well-armed fortresses in areas that are disputed by the Philippines, Indonesia, and other countries, and which, you know, sort of resembles a mini Japan in 1939. So, but what we don't need is a conflict. Even though the U.S. Department of Defense has shifted a lot of resources into what they called a Indo-Pac, or Indo-Pac, that's India, Indian Ocean, Pacific Ocean surge, where their resources are now being focused in that direction as opposed to Europe and the Middle East. But we don't need any October surprises here that involves confronting China at all, because one, we'll lose. China comes off as the adult in the room. They garner more sympathy. They have more economic power than the United States does at this time. And they know Donald Trump will fold with a behind the table or under the table deal, so long as it, you know, doesn't affect his finances. So I really hope we don't have any such thing.
I hear you, but here's the other side of that. We do know that nothing matters more to Trump than this re-election, and nothing he's got going is working right now. So, Malcolm, it's not that we don't need it. We all know we don't need it. The question is, will he do it because he thinks it's the only way back to a second term?
You know, we all know the psychosis of Donald Trump as it stands right now. As a matter of fact, there's a great documentary that I'm in called Unfit, and it's it'll come out again this fall, where all of these psychiatrists and psychoanalysts really analyze him, including his niece, who just published a new book, and she says that his psychosis is so malignant that deaths mean nothing to him. And if he can benefit from your death or deaths, then he'll do it without any remorse whatsoever. Again, I think that if Trump will do anything, he'll do something domestic that will be extremely violent and extremely confrontational, using his, you know, newfound secret polices, or he'll create another, immigrant convoy coming up from Latin America. Mm.
Rosemary?
I don't think I have anything to add. I'm going to sit this one out. I wanted to go off on a tangent. Maybe I'll just throw it in, and you'll have to pull it all back, Joe. But The Niece, the Mary Trump book, I'm just so grateful that yet again Trump has lost an effort to censor a book that is negative about him. This whole program this morning has been about how he deals with criticism. And so his latest effort has been to stomp all over the First Amendment. And he lost when he went against Bolton, and now he's lost against his niece, including first the publisher, which was no prior restraint on a publisher. They were not party. Scribner was not party to any sort of deal to not talk about Trump. And then they let the niece out of her confidentiality agreement on the basis of, get this, that it was based on fraud, that Trump and his one brother had cheated the survivors of the third brother out of their due inheritance, and therefore their confidentiality agreement doesn't hold. And I cannot wait to hear her be interviewed, which I'm sure will happen this week. I was hoping she would just call into one of the talk shows last night after the ruling came out. But this is yet another of the principles that the judiciary has continued to uphold in the age of Trump. There is no prior restraint still in the United States. So I'm sorry, that's a tangent from what you're saying, but it is connected to that.
No, I don't find it to be a tangent. I'm also interested in the fact, and Rosemary, I'm interested in your thoughts on this for a couple of reasons, but which will probably be obvious, but the fact that she is continually labeled as a clinical psychologist, that they're making that point.
Yes.
I find that interesting.
And she has a PhD in the subject.
Yes, she does. She is no slouch. She's also prettier than Ivanka, although I know we're not supposed to make physical comments. I think that must annoy Trump, too. But they're saying that because, of course, she would be so easily discounted by the hate machine, the assassination machine of the Trump administration, as a disgruntled, ungrateful,
a nutty relative,
all the things.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
A nutty relative.
Yeah, nutty relative. And she's very hard to do that. She does come off, and I've not read the book. I've only looked at the same excerpts and listened to Rachel Maddow read it as everybody else. I am going to buy this one. But she comes off as vindictive. She totally turned him into the New York Times. There's no question about that. But you see why. You can read this book and find out why. And there's also that kind of clinical analysis of why someone would do this. Why would Trump do this to his niece when there's plenty of money to go around? Why would they do it? So I find her very interesting. Pretty brave, too.
Mike, were you going to say something?
In the same way as Fauci, by the way, to be willing to put up with that kind of assassination efforts that Trump dedicates to people he doesn't like.
Mike?
Yeah, I was going to jump in and just say that that's a good point, Rosemary. He's lost that battle. He lost the Bolton battle. He lost in the Supreme Court. He's now, the Fauci thing has really backfired on him. I think, Alan, you're right. I think we're appropriately fearful that he'll do whatever is necessary. He'll try to pull that Trump card, getting the bridge metaphor. And and many of you probably saw the story over the weekend in the New York Times about how after the Access Hollywood tape surfaced in October of 2016, everybody just assumed it was over for Trump. But he pulled together all the women who were publicly talking about having been abused or raped by Bill Clinton and turned the whole table on him. And he does incredibly, risky things because that's the way he likes to operate. So he might risk going to war with China in the South Pacific, or he might risk other things that could, dropping a bomb in North Korea or Iran. I mean, it's scary. It's frightening.
You know, Mike, that Donald Trump would do something risky in order to change the narrative is par for the course. We now know this is his MO when it comes to anything. But I think changing the narrative for him, using your Clinton analogy there, he doesn't care so long as his base loves it. And here's the real kicker. It's the media that is responsible for the lack of outrage. And that's because the media will go and they'll say, well, 38% of Trump, 38% of voters support Trump. And then that's it. They don't care anymore about the subject because they feel so long as Trump has this 90 some odd percent approval in the Republican Party, then it's not a bad thing. And I've never been able to understand that. Things were, children were caged and, parents are being separated from them this very week. And so long as Trump's base supports him, the media doesn't give it its proper level of disgust and outrage. I find that very weird.
Now, from the media point of view, we go to Rosemary Armeo.
Yeah, from the media point of view. Malcolm, this is what every war correspondent, every foreign correspondent based in Africa has felt for years. They have committed suicide over this, that something so massive and important you cannot convey. In fact, it almost has the opposite effect. The more you write, the more pictures you show, people end up, the audience ends up with exhaustion, and they tune it out. This is not the media's problem from lack of coverage. It's the media. It's something that happens because people feel like it's overcovered. Like, it's like, hey, I can't listen to this anymore. I'm going to go away from it. And that happens, not just on the story about the caging of children. I just totally agree that there's no outrage when there should be. You see those pictures of little toddlers in a cage, it's just horrifying. And yet, it's like the ozone layer, too. You know, what can I do about this? And so you tend to close your eyes rather than read it. It's not that the media is not covering it and not as outraged themselves. This new book out, Separated, I totally get it. MSNBC correspondent, the guy was sent to the border and was so upset. He spent the next 3 years devoting his life to figuring out how that policy of separating families came into play, who's to blame, what can be done about it, and he wrote a book about it. There's not lack of dedication by the media. There is exhaustion on the part of the audience, and Trump knows this. Trump uses this every day. It's his whole distraction policy.
Two quick letters, and then we'll go to a break.
Went on and on.
That's all right. Mike, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I wanted to say that was a brilliant response, and I completely agree. Very impressive, Rosemary.
Daisy writes,
yay.
I heard Dr. Fauci interviewed yesterday. It is clear he will do whatever he can to stay because he wants to make sure the vaccine is developed safely in Trump's hands. He could kill us all rushing out a vaccine. Marie says the longer Dr. Fauci stays on Trump's team and the higher his star rises, the bigger the bullseye on his back and the tighter will be the muzzle the jealous administration will place on him. Would the press agree to continue to cover the doctor's remarks with or without his holding an official government position?
That's a great question. Rosemary.
No, I'm going to do your pass thing. I would rather respond than just jump on that.
Or you could bid two clubs. So,
well, figure out your wager. We're going to go to a break, and when you come back, we can move on.
I think, by the way, the answer is no. The press would not take him as seriously as if he's in the administration. So we can duke that out.
I think they would because we go for conflict, Alan, and it would be this man who had been dumped by the president, and now he's fighting back. Look at how they responded to name him, Bolton, Sessions, anybody who used to be in the administration who now
gripes
against the administration gets front page.
To which I would say, who? Come on, these guys, you know, they have their
Mattis.
Yeah, I'm even Mattis. Is that who? I mean, the fact is that these are very important people. They had a lot to say, but they're not nearly as important as when people were saying when they were in the administration that they were in conflict with the president.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance. We will do so right after this break. There's a study being released today that says the coronavirus pandemic stripped an estimated 5.4 million Americans of their health insurance between February and May, a stretch in which more adults became uninsured because of job losses than have ever lost coverage in a single year, according to this new analysis. The study is going to be released by Families USA, a nonpartisan consumer advocacy group. They found that the estimated increase in uninsured laid-off workers over the three-month period was nearly 40% higher than the highest previous increase, which occurred during the recession of 2008 and 2009. In that period, 3.9 million adults lost insurance. Stan Dorn, who directs the group's National Center for Coverage Innovation and was the author of the study, says we knew these numbers would be big. This is the worst economic downturn since World War II. It dwarfs the Great Recession. So it's not surprising that we would also see the worst increase in the uninsured. Alan.
Yes, and we see the president trying to get rid of another 23 million people because of his war on Obamacare. And, you know, just think about the implications, again, of a narcissist who thinks that the way that you win elections is you talk about those people who are getting help. It's disgusting.
Rosemary.
On me in the wrong time.
What is the right time?
There's no question that the economy has been hurt and is scarred, and people are suffering. And I do blame Trump for this, but I also want to bring in McConnell to this discussion because he's now linked any future help or relief to absolute lack of liability, to impunity for corporations. And we're already getting a hint of some of the corruption going on with this program in the past and with its the way they're producing materials that are no good or very expensive for the government. So it's very, I'm sorry, very, very disheartening.
Malcolm.
You know, I just find it absolute fascinating, you know, as an African-American man, the level of hatred that Donald Trump has for black people. I mean, you know, I think again that there someday in the next administration, we're going to find those documents where once they realize that the majority of people who were getting COVID in urban areas were minorities, I think it's going to come out that that's when somebody will write a tell-all book and say, well, that's when he decided to slow down and not spend money on testing and that it wasn't really affecting quote unquote America. But as Alan said, the removal of Obamacare now is insane. Okay, we know he hates women, right? So he wants to get rid of provisions and got rid of provisions for birth control. But to do it at this point and the halt expansion of Medicaid and Medicare, all these things, I'm sorry, this just is another, point where his absolute hatred of Barack Obama as, well, let me rephrase that. That old saying I think it was Lyndon Johnson, correct me if I'm wrong, that, the lowest white man always can be led to believe that he's better than the greatest black man. That's Trump's thing. That is his bete noire against Barack Obama. He has to tear down every component of his legacy. And it's a weird psychological study that I'm sure PhDs are being written about right now. But, Americans will die because of it.
Yeah, that's on one level sounds like so far out conspiracy, Malcolm, but there's increasing evidence of what you're saying. I look at Stephen Miller, who's an avowed white supremacist, and I think this head writer business with Tucker Carlson is something maybe the Media Project will take that on, but it's a political story. The head writer of that show, who's been associated with Tucker Carlson, a known Trump associate and advisor, has been openly writing, not openly because he did it under a fake name, but has been writing racist, horrible rants for years, and it's just come out now. And Fox goes, oh, no, it had nothing to do with Tucker Carlson. Come on. And why did the CDC hide that report, which looks on the face of it to be just a straight demographic public health report on who and where the virus was striking? And, of course, that's where we have the definitive proof that it's hitting minorities. Why did the CDC hide that? So it's terrible that what you're saying, Malcolm, does not sound like craziness. It could be true.
Well, it's not crazy because in my career as an intelligence professional, my job was to find the dots between the dots that we could see. And I can easily see, the pathology, and psychopathy of Donald Trump's decision making. There has to be paper for some of these things. There has to be minutes for some of these things. And the way that they're going, I constantly bring up the Vonnegut conference, which, if you don't know, was the conference held in Berlin in the 1940s, where they
we lost Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Not ignorance. You can hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. You dropped out for a second. Go ahead.
Okay. I said, I think here that these decisions that we're seeing, or let me rephrase that, indecisions that we're seeing are conscious decisions. And they believe this herd immunity thing. They know it's happening to blacks and people of color. And we're someday going to find out that they didn't care until, of course, it hit Texas and Arizona and Iowa.
Well, it's a new kind of war on poverty.
Yeah, yeah, really is. But, you know, hopefully there will be another administration before we figure this out, because if they stay in power, people will die by the hundreds of thousands, and there will never find out until some person decides you need the book.
And people are already dying by the hundreds of thousands. That's the other thing that we can't forget here. You know, I'm still sitting here burning. Joe will admonish me for this later. Still burning about this letter from this person who said, stop picking on Trump. No, not till I'm 6 feet under. I mean, it is really, it's boring for you to hear you say this over and over again. Think about Hitler. Think about all the people who could have done something about this, quote, crazy man, and didn't, and ended up costing so many millions of lives as a result. I'm angry about the letter. I'm sorry. It was signed member and supporter.
All right. Well, I will not admonish you, but I for your own health, just let it go.
Too late now.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance. First, news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance. Very nice to have you with us as well. Panel at WAMC.org. A couple quick letters, and then we'll go to another issue. Russ says, desperate times call for desperate measures. Trump will declare the Democratic Party as a domestic terrorist organization. Look out, ladies and germs. He'll be coming for me and you and your little dog, too. All right. We go to Leslie, who says, before squatting in the White House, Trump has never had to work for anyone in his life, and I dare say has never worked a day in his life. The concept of work is so foreign to him. And that is why he can't be bothered to do anything about the pandemic or anything that requires him to stop tweeting and watching Fox and Fools. Carolyn says, why is no one addressing the fact that capitalism is no longer viable in the country today? It is responsible for the premature openings, the need for a lower class of people who do the work for the rich elite, and creates a government where wealth equals power. Until we acknowledge that capitalism helped lead us to the inequities we are experiencing in our lives today, we will never achieve a truly equal society. Who would like a crack at that?
Well, I think that it's not completely untrue, but what are we placing it with? Communism didn't work so well. Socialism doesn't work well in this country. There's no replacement. And I would also maintain that capitalism is partly working bad now because of the government in place, which interferes with capitalism when it doesn't suit its own political needs. There's nothing about capitalism as a system that calls for reopening the economy so fast that people are dying and you have to shut it down again. That is stupid administration, not an evil system. But that is none of this is to say that capitalism doesn't have some really bad evil in it.
Alan?
Yeah, I think...
Well, no, go ahead, Malcolm.
No, please. No, absolutely, Malcolm.
I think that, when people... I think are misusing the word capitalism when they're actually trying to think of the definition of fascism, which is a dictatorship of the capitalist far right, as Mussolini himself called
it.
And so they're lumping everything into that. And to be honest, that level of fascism and oligarchy is starting to creep into American society. And we're now finding there are no guardrails against that. But it has nothing to do with the fundamental system of economics. It has more to do with how people manipulate government for their own self-interest. And I think that here's an opportunity for Joe Biden to come right out and be the next FDR and say, I welcome the oligarchy's wrath and that we're going to reevaluate the system and get rid of the inequities. If he does that, if he can bring us back, you know, to a greatness in that respect, where the governmental system is reengineered back to some fairness, he could be a great president.
I want to move on to.
I just want to say one thing, Joe, and that is that the isms, the communism, the socialism, the capitalism, they're never quite what we think of when we think of them as a political stance, or as they're not that. Communism was turned into be Stalinism, and the socialism we really haven't seen,
true,
except as Mario used to point out again and again. Do you go to the public library? Do your kids go to school? and that is a form of socialism. So we have mixed economic systems, but they are almost inevitably corrupted by someone or something.
Mike, anything on that?
No. You just need to put the guardrails that Malcolm was referring to back in place. Capitalism needs to be needs to be controlled, and it needs to have the flaws corrected, and it needs to be forced to be equitable.
Yeah, and you know what? Those guardrails need to become laws now, not norms, not gentlemen's rules, mm-hmm, not standards. Mm-hmm. Laws, yep, with severe punishment, and people need to be sent to jail.
And we sure see the Trumps playing with norms and saying, I don't have to obey any norm. I'm just going to do what I want to do. Right. We've learned about why we have to have laws.
Yeah, you know, I was, by the way, I was in the greatest socialist American experiment in our last 244 years for over 20 years. I was in the armed forces. And believe me, that is 100% socialist. Free health care for families and service members, free meals. All we got to do is risk our lives. But America does have socialist systems in place for those people who love to play with those words.
Some of us are in a grand experiment, socialist experiment now, too, called Medicare. It works pretty well.
Good point.
And there's Social Security, too.
I like that one. Yes.
All right. I want to move on to schools and the reopening of schools in this country. The big news was yesterday that in New York, the governor laid out a very detailed plan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo laid out a very detailed plan of how schools can reopen in the fall. And it is very detailed. It is very data-driven. And it is, it's hard to know where we're going to be because he's talking about an August 1st date, and it's difficult to know where we're going to be. Meanwhile, in California, the two largest public school districts said on Monday that instruction would be online only in the fall, and the latest sign that school administrators are increasingly unwilling to risk crowding students back into classrooms until the coronavirus is fully under control. The school districts in Los Angeles and San Diego, which together enroll some 825,000 students, are the largest in the country to abandon plans for even a partial physical return to classrooms when they reopen in August. And I guess I'm interested in whether this announcement from these huge schools will kind of open the door for many other schools and in ultimately allowing them to do what they think is best, meaning keeping them online. Mike, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a model. It's in New York. We're looking at probably hybrids. I like what the governor said yesterday about how you reopen it when it's safe to reopen it. And how do you know if it's safe? You look at the data, and he doesn't want to use children as guinea pigs. I think that sizes it up. I mean, all these school districts that are going to start out either as a hybrid or completely online, don't you think the plan is to evolve into a physical back to school as it sees it safely possible? And it might be a few months, it might be a whole school year, but to lock them in on something so soon, like Florida saying it has to reopen with kids in the classroom in August. I mean, it just seems to be exactly what Cuomo was warning about. It's using the kids as the guinea pigs out there to see what happens.
I know somebody who came. I know somebody who came back. I know somebody who came back from camp, a young kid with 101 temperature. Now I think it turns out that he doesn't have the COVID. Nevertheless, could you imagine your child or your grandchild being exposed to that, bringing it home? It's just dumb.
Former Secretary of Education Arne Duncan said yesterday on MSNBC, he said essentially Donald Trump doesn't care about your children, and he would send them all there and let them get disease so long as it positively impacts the economy. And it cuts to Mary, Donald Trump's niece, is it Mary Trump? Saying that he will kill you if it benefits him. I really believe this now.
I was a
big resistor in the conspiracy theories about his psychology, but it's there and it's evident, and it's a very clear chain that he wants kids back in school to relieve rural parents and voters out in the Midwest. And people have come to him, and he doesn't care whether it impacts the children or your mom or your dad or your grandmother.
I'm interested in this topic because of, the administration has been so outspoken on it, and Betsy DeVos was on all the Sunday shows trying her best to whatever she was doing. defending it. I don't know what she was saying, but the point, and Alan was alluding to this a moment ago, but you say to the children, and she kept on saying this, the children have a very low risk of getting it. And yet we're seeing summer camps. We're seeing one in Illinois. We're seeing several in Alabama. We're seeing camps, as Alan talked about, where the workers are getting it. And they're sending the kids home because it starts with one, then three, then five, then seven. And I think in one case it was over 30 people who tested positive for coronavirus. I don't know the answer to it. I'm just asking the question as to how you then say, okay, we're going to have a plan. This is why the governor's plan seems to make the most sense, because it says, all right, you have to stay in this phase, and if you don't stay in this phase, we're going to close the schools.
See, this is the problem here.
You know, what's also overlooked is that schools are not just for children. They're filled with adults, too, as the mother of an elementary school teacher. That makes me very worried. I am so glad not to have children right now to make a decision. My granddaughter is not doing well at home. She wants to socialize and get out there. I get it. But to send her out when this administration so callously, so incompetently is making it seem like they're nothing more than guinea pigs, how can you say yes to that, even when it's what you want and the kids want? It's just a risk, even if it's as low as little Betsy is telling us it is. Do you want to take it for the sake of what, Donald Trump's economy?
I think they're also saying that children, when they get COVID, don't have all of the serious illnesses usually that adults get. But all of these children are going home where they have parents and grandparents living with them and exposed to them. They're going to spread it everywhere. And it seems like somebody doesn't care about that.
No. I want to take some serious exception to Rosemary's calling out of somebody because they were ugly. Now, if Betsy DeVos, I'm not going to say
I didn't call her ugly. I called her incompetent.
No, you said somebody.
Betsy DeVos isn't ugly, actually.
Well, that's not my point. That's not my point. Earlier, you did say somebody was ugly, as I remember.
I said Mary Trump was prettier than Ivanka, and that would annoy Trump, so I kind of like it.
Yeah. Because so I just wanted to make the point that I just made the point that I saw DeVos on the television, as we say here, the television, I thought that it was criminal. What she was saying was basically criminal, should be criminal anyway, and the fact that she looked like, if she looked not good, ugly, or any of that stuff. Well, that shouldn't count.
Reference to her physical look. She's completely incompetent. Even Kirstjen Nielsen, who was defending a policy equally horrible, putting children in cages, came out, and she was forceful. She was direct. She convinced people for a long time before the truth came out. Betsy DeVos was being called, deceitful and callous the minute she stepped off the sets.
Right.
That's what I'm referring to, not her physical looks.
Yeah.
Well, who makes the decisions?
Who cares about her physical looks? I mean, this woman.
Yeah, that ain't right.
Every time I see Betsy DeVos, the first thing I think is she wants those 1,001 puppies. You know? I mean, she.
Cruella, she's Cruella.
Yeah, she's Cruella DeVille. She has a malicious outlook towards children and education, which is criminal. They are running a grand experiment of send them back. We don't care what the science is. We don't care whether they become a mass transmitter. And by using Europe as a model is absolutely disgusting. They don't have coronavirus now. We have the world's largest case of coronavirus, and it either tells me they all live in a alternate reality where the disease is defeated, or they are doing this deliberately. Either one is criminal.
We have some letters on this very topic, and I think they're interesting. Vicky says all teachers in Florida are represented by unions. Each school district has one. The psychology teachers in Orange County, forced to work with students in the summer, just filed a grievance against their school board based on workplace safety. They cannot strike, but these grievances will start that they ultimately go to binding arbitration. Will be interesting to see how effective the unions are or whether they are in the pocket of the school districts. Rosemary, any thought on that?
No.
Okay. Alan, any thought on that?
As Rosemary recently said, no.
I'd love to know what advice Betsy DeVos or Donald Trump would provide regarding the return of their grandchildren to school in light of the pandemic.
Oh, well, you know, that's one of the things that really ticks me off more than anything else. You know that when those southern, Solons spend their time saying nobody should ever be allowed to have an abortion and their granddaughter needs an abortion, that kid is going to get one. It's going to be, you know, they'll put them on a plane, they'll take care of them. But, you know, this whole business of we take care of our own and we screw everybody else.
Alan, she made a hint the other day in her statement that schools that don't open won't get funded.
Right.
And we will give funds to schools, you know, to give parents other options. This is if you wanted to see an October surprise, I wouldn't be surprised if they call for the destruction or the dismantlement of the Department of Education and 100% school choice because liberals won't let the children go to school.
Sandra.
Wow, you're coming up with some really good conspiracies. Very scary today, Malcolm.
The problem is I am always right. 100% for the last 2 years.
Damn it, I am always right.
You sound just like you know.
Listen to me because it's just, you know, they call me Nancy Dominic for a reason.
Oh my. Okay. Mike, I'm gonna throw this one to you. Sandra asks, what about school busing? How is busing gonna be handled in this situation?
I think you have to do everything based on what works, what science works. You don't send them back until the right numbers are there, like Malcolm said, till we get to the levels like across Europe. You treat the hot spots effectively and don't go there and you know, like Cuomo says, use the data to decide. But buses can be cleaned and you don't do it until you have to. And maybe you have to have twice as many bus routes it's the kind of thing that you have to dribble out and keep testing and gradually. It's like taking cold water and gradually making it warmer and warmer and warmer until you get back to the right temperature.
We have about 4 minutes and before we have to take a break, and I have about five letters on capitalism and socialism, so we'll go there.
Oh,
Andrew says, please be aware that Germany is a socialist country and is doing economically very well. It is also one or arguably the leading country in the world. The UK is also a socialist country if you look at the systems in place like free health, etc. You, quote unquote, you Americans have a strange McCarthyite reaction to the word. You need to look beyond your own borders. I am a Scotsman who lived in Germany for 20 years, so I learned firsthand how well that system runs. We go.
This letter is absolutely correct. But the problem in America is that getting past our sense of the word would take so much political will and so much effort that we probably would be better off working on our kind of socialist capitalism, which is what we really want in this country.
Marion writes, the reason we can't shut down is people can't survive economically without cash infusions from the government, which Republicans won't allow because they consider it socialism. In Denmark and Democratic Socialist country, 70% of salaries were paid by the government during their shutdown. In the end, neither system works in its pure form, and the issue is in what proportions will be blending the two.
I like what Malcolm said when he said, I'm always right, because I already said that. What was in that letter? In other words, I'm always right.
Edie says, every time we pay taxes to fix the roads in front of someone's house, that's socialism. When New York State pays for services of the ill and unfortunate in Kentucky, that is socialism. We go to capitalism. Capitalism.
No, it's also capitalism because you fix the infrastructure in order to make the system work better. So it's all in your definition.
We go to Nick, who says capitalism requires constant growth in all aspects. The planet cannot sustain it. We need another model. I don't have the answer. All right. Tom says Trump is like a little kid. Everything he does has to be the biggest or the best. He won by the biggest margin. He had the most people at his inauguration. He has the best words. And of course, he's a very stable genius. Anything that shows him to be the fraud that he is just gets his underwear in a knot. And because he's so immature, he just can't stand it. Then Mark on the virus says the only good thing about the Los Angeles and San Diego school districts announcing that they will be remote only in the fall is it means that there is no way Trump gets reelected. Doesn't matter how much they cheat and steal, expect highest voter totals in U.S. history. People will turn out for this. I'm not sure I understand the Alan, what do you think?
Yeah. No, okay. I've been saying this all along. I think that, first of all, I think the letter is right on target. I think people have been challenged. I think Hillary lost because a lot of people saw her as the same old thing. Whether they were right or not, that's the way they saw her.
No, but I mean, as far as the connection to the school openings?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I think the school openings are part of it, unless I missed the quote, the point of the letter.
He is saying that because the letter writer is saying that because the president, San Diego and Los Angeles announced that their schools would be going remote only, that means that there is no way that Trump can win.
Well, you know, I think there's no way Trump can win, period. And I think that this is just one more bullet in the reason he's not going to win.
And we have 30 seconds. Anyone else want on that? Mike?
Go ahead.
Go
ahead, Malcolm.
Go on, Mike.
Oh.
Alphonse Gaston.
Well, and then I was just going to say that it does make you worry, though, that if Hillary was same old, people will see Biden as same old, and they won't be motivated to go out. But this time, perhaps they will be.
Yeah, I think they will be.
All right, we're going to take a break. I got to take a break, Malcolm. We'll come back, I promise. We'll pause here. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Romeo, and Malcolm Nance on the panel this morning. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance. So I added this to the docket. We'll see if anybody, we'll run it up the flagpole, see if anybody salutes. But what do you make of the Redskins finally changing their name? Activists, politicians, and players are all now weighing in on the Redskins name change. We don't know what the new name's going to be yet. There's much talk about that. But the NFL team announced on Monday that it would be retiring, finally, would be retiring its Redskins name and logo. Some Native American leaders across the country quietly celebrated. It was a relief for some, surreal for others. The announcement brought a semblance of closure for the representative of United Nation who had started the Change the Mascot campaign to fight against the team name years ago. It closes a painful chapter of denigration and disrespect for toward Native Americans and other people, Halberter said. This is about our children, about our future. Again, we don't know what the new name is going to be, but it has finally happened. And after so much resistance on the part of the team, you do have to wonder why now was the time, and also what and then why it just took so long in general. Malcolm, any thoughts on this?
I heard the director of FedEx went to them and said that they will take away their sponsorship and change the name of the field.
Yeah.
And that was the final straw. Yeah, so it's always capitalism, right? That intrudes to get you some measure of social justice. And I think that's a great thing. The name is degrading. And it's supposed to represent the savageness, fearlessness of the noble savage. If they can come up with the Nats for the baseball team and win the World Series, then they can change this. Maybe it'll change their fortune, too.
Yeah, maybe they can.
I think that this is true. There's been an effect because of economic pressure, but that was brought about by what's happening since George Floyd was killed. And I think that's another testimony to the power of the movement that he has set off, for which I am very grateful. I love that. And my pick for a replacement name is Filibusters.
Nothing will get done. They'll never score.
You know, I didn't see that one on the potential
list. The
Washington
Post has not used that name for more than a year now. They've refused to use it, which I think is interesting. It's there are very few times when the media ends up ahead of where popular opinion is. And the last thing I want to say is that I am horrified because I'm looking at old pictures taken from a trip I made in 2012. That's 8 years ago. And in every shot, I'm wearing this windbreaker that I got when I worked in Cleveland. And it has Chief Wahoo on it because the Cleveland Indians, that was their mascot.
Right.
So I could never run for president because these pictures exist.
You know, when Coca-Cola becomes one of the reasons that you change your name. I think Coke was among the people who objected.
Yeah.
There is no greater symbol of American capitalism than Coca-Cola when you think about it.
Mike?
Yeah, I mean, that it took 50 years is a disgrace. It's sad. I'm sad that it was economic pressure and it was not some enlightenment that came after the George Floyd awakening. It's still good, you know, and I think it's still something to be happy about. And I'll be very curious. Yeah, very curious.
But isn't it a mix, Mike? In other words, certainly George Floyd was part of it, as Rosemary has indicated. And certainly Coca-Cola is part of it because it means it takes you over the edge. But it isn't as if it's one or the other. It's all coming together right now.
Well, perhaps, and that could be hopeful, I guess. Yeah. If capitalism is now following justice and awareness of equality, maybe that's good.
So, if you're FedEx, or if you're,
Nike
or Coca-Cola or one of those places, you're sitting around the table with your board of trustees. What are you saying? We should be the last to honor what's going on in America right now? They say no. The thing to do for us right now is to be a leader and to be seen as really caring about those things. Don't you think, Rosemary?
Absolutely. It's good business for them to be good citizens. And it also encourages everybody, members of every group, to get involved in politics because that is how you get what you need and want. It's not just you can't depend on the rest of us or on the 1% to do what's right. You have to stand up for it yourself with clout, with voting power, with money, with the power of your consumerism, and good. I mean, I actually think we have this debate today about capitalism. This is what a capitalism should do. This is the way it's supposed to work. I'm sorry that it took 50 years. I don't think that's part of the deal.
Well, see, now Marx, as I remember my Marx, and I don't remember too much, said that what happens with, they're like the Hydra monster, that capitalism can't stop itself, so that you see, for example, these huge deviations between what the bosses make and what the people who are working for the bosses make, and it just gets worse and worse and worse until it destroys itself. You know, maybe
well, we
right.
saw that with the housing bubble, that the banking sure. industry, without regulation, did not act in their own self-interest, and there was huge destruction to businesses, not just to human lives. But how could that have been avoided? Well, the media might have spoken out. There might have been citizens speaking out. But it was massive greed, too. People liked getting houses that they couldn't afford. And so we paid a price for it. That's capitalism that doesn't work in the Marxian model. But this is the way capitalism is supposed to work, where economic pressure makes politicians do the right thing.
Let's see. We have a couple of letters and we have a couple of moments. So let's
not Mitch McConnell.
Well, I think economics pressure could motivate Mitch McConnell. I mean, if he thought it was going to benefit his party, he would support it probably.
If he thought, and we're getting preciously close to this, that the Trump mantle, which has been followed so assiduously, was going to cost them Senate seats and their majority, you bet Mitch McConnell would change his mind.
Anybody
well,
else?
Well, Congress is coming back this week. Yeah. Or next week, Congress, when Congress gets back, are they going to pass a stimulus bill?
you bet they will. You bet they will. And as Rosemary has pointed out, it's going to help their friends. I mean, that's what's going to happen. In other words, yeah, the Democrats will sit down.
I think McConnell has already seen that he has to pass a stimulus
absolutely.
Bill.
Absolutely.
But a decent
there's
one.
No way he can pull a Trump and turn his back on this. However, he is a consummate strategist, and so he's already seen the way to do it is to get something big he wants, which is impunity for corporations.
We go to a few letters in the time that we have left. Bob says you misstated Betsy DeVos's position. She did not say that children have a low risk of getting the disease. She said that they are not affected by it. She never mentioned trying to keep them from getting it. She basically admitted a desire for herd immunity using the kids as spreaders.
What did I tell
actually,
you?
Actually, that's wrong. Puppies. She actually spoke about the low risk, which was like 0.02% of children will get the disease seriously. And then you translate that, and it's still thousands of children, which she just seemed to write off. She took a lot of criticism for that.
Malcolm?
Deservedly
yes.
so.
She does not care about these children. This is literally get me those puppies. She has an objective. She's been set out to do it. She doesn't care who it damages it. And then she will lie. I mean, to come out and act like she knows what she's talking about. Do you know she has no background in education whatsoever? I mean, and she certainly has no background in medicine whatsoever. Don't believe a word Betsy DeVos says. It will kill your children and your family.
But she's one of the few who have survived.
But money
she says the right thing for Trump.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
She and Ben Carson, right? Those are the two that have been around?
Yeah, because, you know, sycophant and obsequiousness means, what is it, slavish devotion. That's the definition of it. And Trump loves that. They do their job. Ben Carson stands there and doesn't say anything, and she does whatever Trump wants.
Rich writes, I think Trump raising the issue of all kids must go back to school is a diversion from the serious issue of Russia paying to kill Americans, Stone, and the extent of COVID. Oh, wow, Malcolm, we never got your thoughts on Roger Stone.
Yeah. Oh.
Criminal enterprise disguised as a government. That's all there is to it. I mean, this is going to go down in history as one of the most corrupt decisions. And you know what? I hope that there's some recourse in the next administration. You know, when Glenn Kirshner, famous MSNBC lawyer, is the attorney general.
As to the letter writer's point about Russia as a diversion on Russia and the bounty, Malcolm, we've talked about this. I think we talked about it on last week. What do you make of that, of this story kind of going away?
Yeah, well, the story went away because Trump won't talk about it. And the news media, of course, goes after distraction du jour. This is disgusting, as we all know. And again, next year, when, you know, when Colonel Vindman is the Deputy Secretary of Defense and is responsible for investigations in the Pentagon, we will find out just how awful this is. There's a counterintelligence story that has never been told, and that's Trump's relationship with Putin. And that's why Trump will cheat, lie, and steal to win this election to keep him from being found criminally in cahoots with Putin. That's the one thing Mueller did not investigate, was Trump's relationship with Putin or his family's relationship. That is still a story yet to be told.
Hey, I want to hear the rest of the lineup under the new administration, Malcolm. Who else will be running? What's the cabinet look like?
And I want to know which Colonel Vindman.
Right, which one, the brother?
One will be Deputy Secretary of State, or no, one will be at Defense Department, and I said this on air yesterday. I said the other should be U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine.
Let's see. Two more letters here. Ed says, fix the gaps. Alan and Malcolm, or Alcum, as I've called them. Alan and Malcolm are spot on advocating that norms be institutionalized into laws, if not constitutional amendments. We must end Barr's precept. Presidents have unlimited power, and unequivocally separate the Justice Department and FBI from the executive. Weakness of our system of checks and balances have been painfully exposed under Trump. They must be repaired as soon as feasible after the Trump disaster. Finally, this letter from Robert, who says, a great new name for the Washington team. Sports commentator and humorist Charlie Pierce came up with the best name, the Kickbacks. We will end there this morning, and thank you all very much for being with us. Alan, thank you for being
here.
Good
panel. Good panel.
Very
thanks,
good
Joe.
Group. Thanks to Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance. We will continue after this break.